What can people expect Thursday night when they come out to see you?
Well, I'll be doing a lot of modern interpretive dance, expressing myself through movement. Well, you know, it's different. You know, it's funny. When you do something like the Tonight Show, you do new material in the same spot every night. And when you go on the road, you tend to do the same material in a different spot every night. The advantage to that is, you know, like when you're doing the Tonight Show and a story breaks, it's fun to try and be the first person out there with a joke about it. The problem with that is you do the joke and then you say to yourself after the show, I could have done it better. I could have honed it. I could have done this. When you're on the road and you're in a different place every night, you can try it one way Monday and then Tuesday a little bit differently. And then you can sort of let it breathe a little bit.
Sure.
You know, the monologues tend to be just a series of one-liners, whereas when you're doing a live show, you can tell stories and let it breathe a little bit and have a little bit more fun with it.
Hey, what's life like, Jay, after the Tonight Show? Are you sleeping in? Are you missing it? Are you happy? More on the road? What's going on?
You know, I've been on the road for the last 40-something years, so
wow.
When I was on the Tonight Show, I was usually on the road minimum 2 days a week anyway, usually Friday and Saturday, and sometimes if it's within an hour of L.A., like Arizona or San Francisco, I'd go on the road during the week as well. The fun part is I get to go out on school nights now, which I couldn't do before. You know, like my wife and I went out on a Wednesday night. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Boy, Mavis is happy.
You know, so that's kind of fun. It's kind of like, do you miss it or not miss it? It's kind of hard to say because it's fun not having to see every stupid movie that comes out. That's kind of fun. I enjoy, I mean, as much as I like movies, I had to see every terrible movie that existed for the last 20 years.
And Jay, how many times did you have to fake it then when the guest was on?
Here's how you fake it. You know, you were terrific.
Yeah, exactly. I was?
I enjoyed your part. You were fantastic.
So you did a lot of qualifying.
Yeah, you do a lot of qualifying on that. So that makes it kind of odd. But, I really enjoyed it when I did it, and it was great fun, and I was glad we could keep the show number one for 20 years. But sooner or later you realize, you know, you get to the age where you can't throw the fastball, or maybe it's just there's an age difference. The medium is meant for young people, and pretty soon you become your dad. You know, it's time to move on.
Who inspired you when you were coming up?
You know, there was a whole bunch of new comedians. There was Carlin. There was Robert Klein. I was influenced a lot by Robert Klein because Robert Klein, you know, when I was a kid, most comedians like Alan King. They were
right.
Jewish. They were born during the Depression. They grew up in the Lower East Side of New York. We were so poor, that blank, you know. I didn't come from that. My folks were middle class. My dad sold insurance. So I didn't really relate to that. And then when Pryor and Robert Klein and Carlin came along, suddenly they were talking about subjects like the war in Vietnam and things like that that I related to, the music I related to.
Sure.
You know, when you listen to the old-time comedians, these Beatles with the long hair, what
right.
is that? You know, what's that? And then suddenly, you know, you had guys like Pryor and everybody, suddenly Albert Brooks certainly too, talking about things. My parents went, I don't get that. I don't get that joke.
How about Mort Saul, Jay? Or Godfrey Cambridge, those guys,
you know,
like
Mort
George?
Saul, when I was a kid, I always really liked Mort Saul because he didn't necessarily preach to the choir. You know, as much as I like Lenny Bruce played to Lenny Bruce's audiences and never really had much influence to the masses. Mort Saul, when he went on the Ed Sullivan,
yep.
and made fun of Joe McCarthy.
Yep.
That was, oh my God. Oh my God. That was unbelievable. I mean, people are like, whoa, what is this? I believe Mort Saul was the, I don't know if he's the first comedian to be on the cover of Time magazine. Mort Saul, I think, was the first straight stand up to do it.
Did you ever dream that first time you stepped out with that gorgeous jacket on the Tonight Show that you'd host it someday?
No. And, you know, the funny thing was, I had done a movie, and I got the suit for free.
Oh, I like that. That's what you wore. That was green, wasn't it?
It was green.
Lime green.
But at the time, you know, I remember Johnny was wearing ascots.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So it didn't seem, I mean, it's really funny now, and it looks so stupid, but at the time, nobody, you know, if anybody had said, what is that green suit? They were like, oh, that's very stylish.
Hey,
all right, fine.
What year was that, Jay?
That was March 7th, 1977.
Yeah, and remember what Doc used to wear?
Yeah, the same thing, exactly.
I mean, you probably look conservative next to him.
Exactly. That's the way, you know, I mean, you can only live in the time you live in, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, final question, since I'm a gearhead, I just went to Amelia, sure. And that was amazing. What's on your radar? What do you want to get? What haven't you gotten that you'd like to collect in the field of cars?
Well, I kind of, you know, I'm one of those guys, I buy the story as much as I buy the car.
Yep.
I mean, if a car's got a great story, you know, I had an old man call me, 93 years old, and he Jay Leno, my name is Irv Pupkin. I'm 93 years old. I can't drive anymore. I want you to buy my car. I said, what do you have? He goes, I got a 67 Chrysler two-door Imperial with the air conditioners front and back. And I said, well, kind of, that's not really my kind of car. Oh, you got to come see it. I said, where do you live, Mr. Pupkin? He said, on Sunset Boulevard, Beverly Hills. Said, okay, well, right there, Sunset Boulevard, Beverly Hills. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, he may be interesting.
I said, all right, I'll drive over and see it. So it's like the movie. I go and I find the address on Sunset Boulevard. And it's got the winding driveway.
Oh, I love it. You're William Holden, right?
Yeah, and I get up to the house, and he's standing out front wearing a smoking jacket with patches on it and an ascot. And he's got with him a 70-year-old guy with gray hair who's his mechanic, who has worked on the car twice a month. He comes over to check the car out. Now, he bought this Imperial in 67. The fascinating thing is, turns out, he was a movie producer back in the 30s and 40s, and he used to make African-American movies with African-American movie stars. And he showed me all his posters. He had, like, an African-American James Bond and African-American comedians. I mean, when the theaters were segregated, he made African-American films with these African-American movie stars, and they were big stars. And there were comedians and, you know, handsome leading men and beautiful women. And it was just a fascinating thing looking at his scrapbook and whatnot. And so he goes, let me show you the car. You know, so we go in the garage, and he opens one garage, and there is basically a brand new 67 Chrysler Imperial. And he goes, now if you buy this car, you got to take all this crap with it. He opens the door next to it. And when he bought the car, he was so afraid he was going to have an accident or damage it that he bought an extra set of wiper motors. He bought every part you needed if the car broke. He goes, you got to take all this crap, too, if you buy it. I said, well, now I have to buy this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a brand-new 67 Imperial. And it's hilarious. It's got these dual air conditioners front and back. You turn them on, and you're freezing in like 30 seconds. So that's a classic case of buying the story.
What was the story behind the Toronado? Or did you just want to get one?
I always liked that 66 Toronado. You know, there was a period when American cars really looked like American cars. If you know nothing about automobiles, and you said to a stranger, what country is this car from? Oh, America. It's the only country, that would make an enormous thing like this with front-wheel drive. Well, we converted mine to rear-wheel drive and gave it 1,000 horsepower and did all kinds of stuff.
Oh, I know. I've seen the pictures.
Oh, but I kept it stock looking, and in fact, I heard from David North the other day, the man who designed the car. You know, it got so much publicity that people started calling him and asking what he thought of it and all that kind of stuff. So he's an older guy now, and he got a big kick out of that. So that was great fun. But, I really enjoyed that period in the 60s.
Oh, the best, yeah. I mean, and that car was just, I remember it so well when it came out. That was one gorgeous car. Were you able to keep the floors flat by making it rear-wheel drive, though?
Well,
raise it a little?
We had to put a transmission tunnel in it.
Oh, you did? Okay.
But that's my favorite years, 1932 and 1966, because by 1932, cars were here to stay. I mean, everybody knew this is not some passing fad. This is going to work. So they made really outlandish V16s, V12s, you know. And by 1966, that was the last year that the designers had free reign. You could make cars like the Lamborghini Miura, the Toronado. You know, there was no bumper height restriction. Headlights must be big. You could do pure design. Were they particularly safe? No, but it was pure design. So that's why people always wonder why cars from the 60s look better than cars now, because, you know, you don't have all the safety regulations. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just a different time.
You know, Amelia just had every Chrysler concept from 41 to 63, and boy, were those cars forward-looking.
The last president of Chrysler, I think his name was Kellner, you know, before they brought in Virgil Exner to do all that. But he said, I don't want any car I can't wear my hat in while driving. So the cars all had these high roofs.
Right.
And then when he was gone, boom, everything just sort of, I remember the ad campaign was, suddenly it's 1960.
Yeah, exactly. Even though they went with that wide forward look in 57, but they were first. I mean, Ford's and the other companies were still boxy when Chrysler came out with those first forward-looking cars.
I was 7 years old. My dad and I went down to Crabtree Motors in New Rochelle, New York. My dad bought a brand-new 57 Plymouth. I think 8 months later, you could see the rust coming through on the hood. And my dad was like, what? I mean, you know, cars, there was no galvanized steel. I mean, those, as good-looking as those cars were, they just had huge... You know, there were no proper drains to get the water out of the chassis and out of the body. And I mean, they all rusted. Like by 59, the car looked 30 years old.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And that's what, you know, you're a researcher too on these. And that's what you read on all those. That's 57 to 59 were so rust prone. And that's why there's so few out there.
Yeah, you just don't see them anymore. It's hilarious. They just literally, you know... My dad's washing the car one day, and his thumb goes through.
Parts are coming off.
A couple part over the headlight cover where they're just rotted out. Hilarious.
God, that's bad. And he paid, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 probably, which was good money then.
Yeah, they were probably about $2,500, something like that.
Hey, Jay, I know it's morning out there, so... thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, no problem.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. I've always watched you, and this was a real treat for me to get to talk to you on the telephone.
Well, thanks a lot. We'll see you at the show.
I'll see you there Thursday.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye. Thanks, my friend. Bye.
Bye-bye.